You know, Matthew chapter 24, I'm really going through this, believe it or not, very quickly. When I usually cover this chapter, I have about five or six classes on it. And I've done it a couple of times since I began preaching because it is so misunderstood and so mistaught. And there's so much error that has been permeating in the religious world as to exactly what Matthew 24 is all about. So I want to start this evening by where we finished up, because I want to get through this tonight so we can conclude this part of the series on the AD 70 doctrine to talk about the consequences, Lord willing, next Lord's Day. Okay, in Matthew 24, verses 4 through 35, this is looking at the destruction of Jerusalem. Jesus looked beyond the fall of Jerusalem to what would be the actual literal end of the world. This would be the section of scripture that begins in verse 36 of chapter 24 and ends at the end of chapter number 25. One of the things that I've reminded you about when we've been studying about how we got our Bible is to remember that the verses and the paragraphs and the headings, all of them were put in by men. Those were not things that were there by inspiration. Those things were added later by translators and by publishers in order to make it easier for us to read it and to keep things flowing in an easy, readable way. So, at the end of chapter 23, as we read this morning, the thought doesn't end at the end of 23. It continues in chapter 24. And it goes all the way through to the end of chapter 25. So the context of this whole section begins in chapter 23, verse 36, all the way to the end of chapter number 25. So when you're going to answer these three questions that we examined this morning, what is going to be the time that Jerusalem is going to fall? What is going to be the end of the age? And what are the signs of your coming? To answer all three questions, you've got to look at all parts of the text. You have to look at all of 24, and you have to look at chapter number 25. This generation. This is the key passage in this text. Look at chapter 24. Look at verse 34. This is the key. This is the key to the time frame of the events that he's talking about. In verse 34, he says, "Surely I say to you, this generation by no means will pass away until all these things would be fulfilled." Now again, the AD 70 theorist says that all these things mean the resurrection, means the judgment, it means the final judgment, the second coming of Christ, all those things. No, that's not what he's talking about. When he says that all these things will come to pass, what has he been talking about for the 33 verses prior to that? He's been talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. That's what he's keying on, the destruction of Jerusalem. And he says not one part of this generation will pass until all these things take place. All the things I'm telling you is going to happen is going to take place. Now see, the AD 70 theorist says, see, he's telling you that all these things are going to take place at that time. And he tries to list all those things that have to do with the second coming and do not have to do with just the destruction of Jerusalem. This is the key passage. Reference to these things and this generation is defined by its earlier use in the book of Matthew. Sometimes you can understand a statement by looking at other statements. Let's just look at a couple. Look at Matthew 1 and look at verse 17. Now this is in the genealogy of Jesus Christ. In verse 17, it says, "So all the generation from Abraham to David are 14 generations. From David to the captivity in Babylon are 14 generations. And from the captivity in Babylon until Christ are 14 generations." I'm going to ask you something. Did that just happen? That there were 14 generations between every one of those events? Well, that's God's providence. But a generation is 30 to 40 years. That's a generation. And so there were 14 of them between all of these events. And then look at chapter number 11 and verse number 16. Chapter 11 and verse number 16. To what shall I liken this generation? Is it like children sitting in the marketplace and calling to their companions? Now, in this text, he's talking about a specific generation. He's talking about the generation of the people that he is in discussion with. So this use of this phrase, this generation, is something that's been used many times in the New Testament. It's not kind of a unique phrase that hasn't been used before. It's been used a lot. It always has reference to a particular generation. And so in this text, it has to do with the generation that Jesus predicted these events. Those people that were there with him, those disciples and those people that were living at that time, they would live long enough to see the fulfillment of what Jesus was prophesying was going to happen to Jerusalem. Now, in Matthew 12 and verse 39, they always wanted a sign. And they said, an evil and adulterous generation, this generation, this wicked generation, is in that era. That day, the generation of Christ's personal preaching, death, and his burial and resurrection. That generation wanted a sign. He's not talking about our generation. He's not talking about some future generation. He's talking about that generation that was living at the time that he was actually living on earth and doing miracles and doing signs and wonders. They wanted to see a sign. And remember, he said there would be no sign given to you but the sign of Jonah. Now, what was the sign of Jonah? The sign of Jonah was the 3 days and three nights in the belly of a fish in Jonah. That was a prophecy, a prelude to what Jesus would do when he died, and he would be in the grave 3 days and three nights. You see, that was a sign. That was a sign. But in Matthew 12, that's a sign to that generation. They would see the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Christ. They would see that. They would be living witnesses of those events taking place in that generation. Now, brethren, that's not talking about us because we didn't see that. We didn't see the death of Christ on the cross. We didn't see his resurrection from out of the grave. And we did not see him ascend to heaven. We didn't see that. That generation doesn't apply to us because we didn't see it. But it did apply to the generation that heard him talking. The men of Nineveh is a generation of Jonah. The Queen of the South is a generation of Solomon, contrasted to the generation of Jesus. Now, the Queen of the South was, the Queen of the South is a generation of Solomon. That Queen of Sheba came and asked all these hard questions. He talked about that generation. He was talking about that period of time. And so when the word generation is usually used in the New Testament, it has to do with a specific period of time. And in Matthew 24, that specific standard of time is the time of the fall of Jerusalem. We also see in Matthew the 16th chapter, in verse number 4, we see a similar statement. This generation passage is the Pharisees and Sadducees of Jesus' day in reference to a sign. They wanted to see a sign. And he said in their generation, they would see a sign. They would see a sign and they would be a witness to the things that Jesus was talking about. Now, this is the way that this phrase, this generation, has been used. Now, look at Matthew 17. Look at Matthew 17 and verse 17. Now, this is after the Mount of Transfiguration. In verse 17, it says, then Jesus said, O faithless and perverse generation, how long will I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? Bring him here to me. Now, what generation was he talking about? He was talking about the generation that was living at the time that he was preaching and he was proclaiming the gospel and he was doing all these things, and he called them a faithless generation. Now, he's not talking about us. He's not talking about the 19th or 20th or 25th century. He's talking about the generation that was on earth, that saw the things he did, heard the parables he preached, heard the teaching he did, saw the wonders that he did. They were a faithless generation. Why? Because they rejected him. He was talking about that particular group of people that were living at that time. In Matthew 23:36, we read this this morning. Observe that this generation is distinguished from the day of your fathers. Go back to Matthew 23. Look at verse 36 again. Assuredly I say to you, things will come upon this generation. They will come upon this generation. Okay, that's talking about the generation that was living during the time of Christ. In verse number 30, he says, and say, if we had lived in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. If we had lived in the days of the prophets, the prophets were a different generation. That's talking about bygone days. That's a different generation. But this prophecy is given to a specific generation that would be living after Christ would die, resurrected, ascend back to heaven. That generation would continue living for the next 30 to 40 years. And that's the generation that would see the things that he predicts in Matthew 24. Now, in verse 34 and 35 of our text, these are important verses. It says, assuredly I say to you that this generation will by no means pass away until all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. All these were to take place before the end of one generation. Before the end of 40 years, within 40 years, all the things that Jesus says in Matthew 24 are going to take place. The premillennial says that many and much of it has not taken place yet. They take the opposite view, that those things are yet future. The AD 70 theorist, he adds things. He adds things to that generation that Jesus did not add. He did not add, he did not say the final resurrection. He did not say the second judgment. He did not say the second coming. Those are things that they tried to put in there that Jesus did not put in with that generation. Now that's the difference in the premillennial and the AD 70th. The AD 70 people add things, and the premillennialist, he thinks it hasn't happened yet. And so there's a contrast there. Attempts by astrologists to make this generation an end of time generation are doomed to fail because of the context. You have to violate the context to arrive at that conclusion. To arrive at the conclusion that this generation refers to a generation that has not even yet been born, maybe, is to violate the context. Let me give you another example. Turn to Mark 9:1. Turn to Mark 9:1. And he said to them, surely I say to you that there are some standing here that will not taste death till they see the kingdom of God present with power. Now, who does that have reference to? Now, the premillennialist says that the kingdom is not here yet. Okay? How do you answer this verse? Jesus said there would be some that were standing here right now during the time of his time on earth that would not die until they saw the kingdom come with power. If the kingdom is not here yet, then there's somebody walking around on the earth 2,000 years old. And you and I know We all know some old people, but we don't know anybody that old. You see, that was that generation. That was a specific period of time. And so anyone that tries to go beyond that generation is doomed to fail. And when you add things to that generation, you are doomed to fail. In describing the desolation of Jerusalem, Jesus speaks of the tribulation in those days. When are those days? Those days have passed. Those days were the days prior to the destruction of Jerusalem. In those days, there would be some things happening. When discussing the judgment, he spoke of that day and that hour. Now, when he talks about the final judgment, he uses a different terminology. Look at verse 36. Look at verse 36 in our chapter. But the day and the hour, no one knows, not even the angel of heaven, but my Father only. Now, that's talking about a different day and hour. That's not talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. Because in our text, he tells them there are signs. He says there are signs that you know that the end is near. Now, the end he's talking about is not the end of the world, not the end of time, not the second coming of judgment. He's talking about the end of Judaism, the destruction of Jerusalem. He says there are going to be signs. You remember we talked about the abomination of desolation? What was the abomination of desolation? Luke said, when you see the armies, when you see the armies in the holy place, and they are circling the holy place, this is the abomination of desolation spoken by the prophet Daniel. What did he have reference to? He had reference to when the armies surrounded Jerusalem, there were Gentiles in the holy place. They're not supposed to be there. The Gentiles are not supposed to be in the holy place. But he says, when you see the armies surrounding the city, know that the end is near. Now, is he talking about the end of time? No, he's not talking about the end of time. He's talking about the end of the destruction of Jerusalem. And he tells them to get out. He tells them to run. He says, flee to Judea. Flee them on. Pray that you're trip may not be in the winter, it may not be on the Sabbath. Brethren, in the second coming of Christ, is he going to tell you to run? Where are you going to run to? Where are you going to run from? You see, it's a different setting. The great flood. A sharpening of the contrast is seen in the days that were before the flood as opposed to the day that Noah entered the ark. Now look at verse 38. Now let's go back to the text. Now remember verse 36? He said, no one knows. No one knows the day nor the hour. But look at verse 38. For as in the days, now, he's making a contrast with nobody knows the hour with what happened in Noah's day. For as in the days before the flood. Now, what does he mean, the days before the flood? Now, God told Noah that man's heart was evil continually. And I have determined that I'm going to destroy that which I created. I'm going to destroy every living thing on the earth that breathes, except you, your wife, your three sons and their wives, and all the animals that you're going to take in the ark. But everyone else is going to die in the flood. That's what he told Noah. And so Noah built the ark. Hebrews 11:7 says, he acted with godly fear of things not yet seen. What had not yet been seen? Rain. God watered the grass with the dew. There had not been rain. So when Noah tells those people he preached to for 120 years, God's going to bring rain from heaven. He's going to break the foundations of the deep under the earth, and he's going to cover this world with water. You know what they did? They laughed at him. They laughed at him because nobody had ever seen it. Nobody had ever seen that. But look at verse 38. They were eating and drinking marrying and giving in marriage. Now, what does that mean? You know what that means? Life was going on just like it did every day. Some came up yesterday, some have come up today. People were getting married, people were feasting, people were drinking, they were just getting on with their life. Did they think there was anything coming? They didn't know. You see, they were just going through life. They didn't know anything was coming. Until the day Noah entered the ark. Remember what he told Noah? Get the animals. Take the animals, put them in the ark. Take your sons and your wives and your family and go in the ark. And the Bible says they entered the ark and God shut the door. They're eating and drinking. They're marrying. They're giving in marriage. Why? They don't know what's coming. It's going to be sudden. Was the destruction of Jerusalem sudden? No. There were signs that it was coming. But in the end, it's going to be sudden. It's going to be something like they didn't expect. Notice it continues. And did not know until the flood came and took them all away, so will it also be at the coming of the Son of Man. Now, what did he just tell us? He told us that the coming he's talking about in verse 36 is not like the coming he told us in the first 34 verses. In the first 34 verses at the destruction of Jerusalem, there's going to be signs. You're going to see the armies. You're going to see all the havoc. You're going to see the earthquakes. You're going to see the pestilence. You're going to see all these things that are happening. And then you're going to see the final thing, the abomination of desolation, talking about Daniel the prophet in Daniel 9:27. And when you see this final piece, when you see the army surrounding the holy city, you need to be figured a way to get out of here. Because this city is about to fall. And if you stay in the city, you will die. Do you remember what happened at the destruction of Jerusalem? There was a skirmish in another part of the Roman province. And Titus pulled back and went to answer the other problem in another place. And so he pulled back the siege for a period of time. Why? To give the Christians who understood the apocryphal language, understood the warning, to get out before the city fell. And they did. Many of them got out. But everyone that remained in the city died in the destruction. And he parallels the second coming that nobody knows except the Father. He parallels that with Noah's day. So what's the parallel between Noah's day and the second coming of Christ? Thief in the night. Unknown. No signs. No warning. It comes when everybody's going through life. When the Lord comes again, life on this earth is going to be continuing. There are going to be people that are continuing living their life like they did every day, not expecting anything to change, but it does change because it's unexpected. Let me give you an illustration in our time. On 9/11, men and women went to work on that morning like they did every day in their lives. And they expected to come home at 5 o'clock for their families. And that's what they intended when they left home that morning. They intended to see their wife, their husband, their children, and expected to be with them that night. And that didn't happen. You know why? Because an unexpected event took place. The event he's talking about in verse 36 is like that event. That is not like the event that he talks about in verses 1 through 34. There are two different events. One has signs, the other has none. And he uses the contrast with the flood in the second. You see, there are two different things under consideration in this text. Not just the destruction of Jerusalem, but also the third question. What is the sign of your coming, and what is the end of the age? Those are other questions, and he answers them by continuing in chapter 24 to 25. Jesus told the sign preceding the destruction of Jerusalem. If you read the text, and we're not going to read it for time's sake, but in this text, in Matthew 24, it says false Christ will come up. He says, they'll say, Christ is here, Christ is there. He says, don't believe him. So don't believe him. You're going to have all these rumors of false Christ. Well, people say, well, there's people claiming to be Christ today. There is. But he says there's wars and rumors. He goes, well, Brother Greer, we still have that today. We still have wars. Yes, we do. But he was talking about this specific period of time. And he said there will be famines, there will be earthquakes. He said, but all of these things are the beginning of sorrows. Because the worst is yet to come. What can be worse than all these things? Pestilence. Wars, rumors of wars, earthquakes. What can be worse than that? Destruction. Destruction is worse than that. That's just the beginning. It's going to get worse because you're going to be destroyed. This city's going up in smoke. Everything in it's going to be destroyed. It's going to be burnt to the ground. And if you're in it, you're going to die. He says, get out. Some did. Many didn't, because they ignored the signs. Jesus also told them of the abomination of desolation. Look at verse 15. Therefore, when you see, now this is something they're going to see. When you see the abomination of desolation spoken by the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, where would that be? That would be in Jerusalem, in where the temple is at. Whoever reads this, listen to what he says. Whoever reads this, let him understand, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let those who are in the field not go back and get his clothes. And woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing babies in those days, and pray that your flight not be in the winter or in the Sabbath. What's he telling them? He's telling them, run! Get out! Is it going to do you any good to do that when the Lord comes again? Would it do you any good to flee to Judea? Would it do you any good to flee to the mountains? Would it make a difference if it's in the winter, the summer, or the spring? Is it going to make a difference? It's not going to make a difference at all. But it will make a difference at the destruction of Jerusalem. But it's not going to make a difference at the second coming of Christ. You see, one destruction has signs. The other has none. You know what that means? There's two different destructions, not one. So when you see all these things, know that it is near, it is at the door. What's that mean? That means it's about to happen. He's not talking about the second coming of Christ. You know why? We're all still here. We're here. He came in judgment and went. What happened in AD 70 happened. But we're still here. He's not talking about a second coming. He's talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. They could know that the destruction of Jerusalem was near. How could they know it? All these signs were pointing that Jerusalem was about to fall. He did all these things to get them to understand that when you see all this stuff happening, when you see all these calamities, when you see the armies around Jerusalem, when you see and you read the prophet Daniel, understand that this is it. This is it. This is about to happen. You better do something. Whether the day or the hour that no one knows, you're not going to be able to do anything. It doesn't matter what you do. It won't matter then. But it will matter at the destruction of Jerusalem. At least three times, Jesus specifically indicates that he was giving tangible evidence that the destruction of Jerusalem was forthcoming. He gave them tangible evidence that they could see, that they could observe, so they would know that it is right there at the door, and you need to get out. But the second coming and the judgment were sudden. They were unknown. It comes like a thief. That's what Peter said in 2 Peter 3:9. That's what Paul wrote in 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 2. It'll come as a thief in the night. I've been robbed. You ever been robbed? I've been robbed. You know what? He didn't tell me he was coming. He didn't call me up Sunday before I went to Bible, before I went to worship service Sunday night. He didn't call me. He said, Keith, while you and me there at church, I'm going to break in your house. Because had he done that, I'd have had the police waiting for him when he got there. You see, that was unexpected. That's how the second coming of Christ is going to be. It's going to be unexpected. This chapter is broken down into two divisions. One is the signs of the destruction of Jerusalem. The second is the second coming of Christ that will have no signs whatsoever. Local destruction versus worldwide destruction. The destruction of Jerusalem was a local event. It was talking about the city of Jerusalem. It's not talking about anything else. It's talking about the city of Jerusalem and Judaism. Because where was the center of Judaism at? Where was the center of all the things in Judaism? Where is it even to this day? Where is it at? It's in Jerusalem. This is not talking about a worldwide destruction. That's what the AD 70 Adventist wants to tell you. He's talking about a worldwide, no, he's not talking about that. And he's not talking about the destruction of Judaism and the resurrection of Christianity. He's not talking about that. He's talking about the destruction of a city and the destruction of a nation. That's local. That's not worldwide. The army was in the holy place. The Judean saints were told to flee the mountains. Command those on the housetops and in the fields to have little reverence if the second coming of Jonah was being considered. Brethren, if this was the second coming, it doesn't matter where you're at. You could be on the housetop, you could be at the bowling alley, you could be visiting with your grandkids, it won't matter. It won't matter where you're at. And wherever you're at, where are you going to run? Where are you going to run? You're not going to run anywhere. Because that's it. The destruction of Jerusalem wasn't it. It was the end of Judaism. It was the fall of Jerusalem. It was the destruction of the temple. But it wasn't the end. And when Jesus went into Jerusalem for the last time, he saw it. He saw it in prophecy. He wept because he knew what was coming. And you know why he wept? Because the Jews brought it upon themselves. But you know what? We're going to do that too. We're going to bring it on ourselves too. But the only difference is we're not going to be able to run. Jesus spoke of the great tribulation, such has not been seen from the beginning of the world until this time, nor shall it ever be seen again. I don't know how many of you are more in here tonight. I don't know any of you know anything about the destruction of Jerusalem. The historians say that the blood were flowing in the gutters of the city. It was overflowing all the gutters of the city, and there were corpses all over the city. And the birds of the air were feeding and feasting on the dead flesh. It was a horrific sight. That's what Matthew 24, verse 1 through 34 is talking about. But beginning in verse 36, that's talking about something quite different. And let me end with this. We're not going to have time to go into chapter 25. But what are the two things in chapter 25 that you know about? The parable of the 10 virgins and the talents. What is the purpose of the parable of the 10 virgins? Five wise, five foolish. What's the meaning behind that parable? Well, you know what? You don't have to wonder. I'll read you what it. In verse number 13. Watch, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. That's not talking about the destruction of Jerusalem, brethren. That's talking about the second coming of Christ. What is the meaning of this parable? Be ready. Be prepared whenever it comes. Be ready. Then what about the parable of the talents? Does it matter if you're a five-talent person? Two-talent, one-talent, doesn't matter. You know what matters? It's what you do with the talent. What did he do with the unprofitable and worthless service? What did he do with them? He cast them into everlasting darkness where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. Is that talking about the destruction of Jerusalem? That's talking about hell. That's talking about hell. And if you don't believe me, look at the last verse in verse 25. Look at the very last verse. And these will go away into everlasting punishment. Is that talking about the destruction of Jerusalem? Neither do people go into everlasting punishment in hell. And look at the other contrast. And the righteous into eternal life. Did that happen at the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70? No, that didn't happen then. You know why? Because it has not happened yet. That event has not happened yet. And you know what? Maybe it's a good thing it hasn't happened yet. Because wonder if you're not ready. You know how the book of Revelation ends? Lord, come quickly. Could you say that tonight? Could you go to bed tonight, lay your head on your pillow, and offer the prayer and say, Lord, come quickly? If you can't do that, you better fix your life. You know why? Because someday that prayer is going to be answered. Someday the Lord is coming. And when he comes, that's going to be it. That's going to be the end. But Matthew 24 is not talking about the second coming of Christ. It is talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. And then in verse 36 to the end of chapter 25, he's talking about the final judgment, the second coming of Christ, the resurrection, and eternal life or eternal punishment. Read the text. Just read the text. Next week, Lord willing, I'm going to tell you very plainly what's the danger and the consequences of believing AD 70. Now, there are some tremendous, tremendous problems if you accept this doctrine. I'll even go out on a limb and tell you this one. If you accept this doctrine, you will lose your soul in hell. Guaranteed. If you accept this theory. It is false to the core. None of these things have happened yet. They are yet to come. This is preview of coming attractions, and they have not happened. And the only thing that matters, brethren, is that whenever it happens, whether it's tomorrow, whether it's 10 years from now, whether it's 150 years after we're dead and gone, it won't matter. It won't matter the wind. The wind won't matter. You know what will matter? There's only one thing that's going to matter. When you die and when I die, and when I close my eyes in death, and I open my eyes somewhere, it matters where I'm going to be. But you know where I'm going to be? I'm going to be what I prepared myself to be. That's where I'm going to be. I'm going to be with the Lord, or I'm going to be in torment with the devil. That's where I'm going to be. And you know who determines that? I do. You do. So tonight, let's be thankful that the Lord hasn't come yet, because it gives us time to make sure we're ready. But let us live our lives like it could be tonight. Could be tomorrow. You know, whenever I say this in meetings and when I preach, people say, you know, you say that all the time. I do. Because you know what? I don't know. One day, I'm going to stand here and I'm going to give this invitation like I'm doing right now, and I'm never going to get another one. I'm never going to get another one. You know what? Tonight could be it. I don't know that. And one night, you're going to be sitting out here and listening to me preach, and one day you're not going to be here. And you know what we both have in common? We don't know when that's going to be for either of us. But if we're both ready, so what? So what? If we're ready, it don't matter. So AD 70, destruction of Jerusalem. Second coming of Christ, false. Resurrection, false. Judgment, false. The end of the world, false. What if it's happened? And it didn't happen in AD 70. Some things happened in AD 70, but those weren't one of them. Please take your song, but go and turn your song to Brother Bill, selected that means an encouragement. I want to thank you for your kind attention. Brother, I could preach weeks on Matthew 24. There's so much misunderstanding about the things in Matthew 24. It's a rich study. I would encourage you to study it on your own. And just look, if you just look at the text, you can't miss it. You can't miss the distinctions and the change and what it's talking about. All you got to do is read the text. But if you're here and you need anything that we can do for you, if we can pray for you, with you, for strength, for the corrections in your life, most of you tonight at the Living on Earth audience is a member of the church. If you've done anything and you need prayers for encouragement, you need to repent of anything, you need to correct things, if we can help you in any way, we're here to do it. And if we can help you, we encourage you to come forward. That's together we stand as we sing.